everyone, and welcome again to our Retail Recorded by Colliers. Of course, I'm your host, Angie Solanki, National Director of Retail for the U.S. at Colliers. And as we always appreciate you participating, joining, listening in. And we're always talking to different experts in our industry. And I want to say, you know, we want to mix things up. So we always think about retail as the main actor, the actor that is in the dominant role. But at times there are also, you know, where it is the supporting actor. And so what I've done is I said, how does retail support other product types? And I reached out to our good friend, Michael Lertzman, who is head of office agency leasing here in the US. He's based out of Chicago. He's here with Colliers. I'm excited to have Michael join us because not only does he spend all his time daydreaming about office, he has actually put a lot of time and effort really looking at what has changed in our office environment, especially over the past, you know, 4 years. What was it? Where was it? Where is it going? And it's really important for us to understand that both from a client perspective, and he is seeing all the trends, all the changes. He's communicating and talking to clients in the office space, both from the landlord side, also the tenants, the community, and the different markets throughout the U.S. So, Michael, thanks for joining us today.
Thank you for having me, Angie. It's my pleasure to be here, and I appreciate the warm introduction. And, you know, I think you've teed it up nicely. Office and retail need to partner up with each other better than ever in the new world that we're seeing, certainly in most office markets across the country. So I appreciate you having me on today.
Yeah, 100%. I mean, to your point, can you just kind of briefly give us what was, you know, again, this is a predominantly retail audience, but also very curious audience. And my goal is to kind of, tag on our kind of a new following within the office segment. But tell us, you know, look, office, both in urban and suburban, is very different. But let's focus on urban for a moment. Give us your point of view before we had the shutdown, and then give us your point of view as it relates to where we are today.
Sure. It's really changed pretty radically in the last almost 4 years now since the first wave of shutdowns came. Urban office historically relied on retail is really an added service to the tenants in the building. It was taken for granted by most tenants and really most landlords for years and years and years that urban cores would be these vibrant places where you had a lot of daytime population. In a lot of cases, you had nighttime population too. So there was never really much thought or out-of-the-box strategy from an office landlord's perspective as far as how you had to look at the retail space in your building. There was the traditional retail market rent model in most urban cores. Tenants would expand, tenants would contract, but the major categories that we needed in office buildings, there was never much concern that a category could either get wiped out or fundamentally changed that would service your office tenants. Now COVID happens, the shutdowns happen. Different major urban hubs across the country have had their own challenges to deal with, but the common thread for office buildings and office buildings owners is that retail as a service or amenity to your office tenants above has fundamentally changed. In today's world, where most employers are still having some challenges getting back to full attendance in their offices or even want, and they need more services and amenities for their people who are staying home in some cases. What does that mean, services and amenity? Food service, coffee, drug stores, other neighborhood type retailers that were taken for granted for all these years. Now the office buildings have to partner much more with these retailers than they ever did in the past to help people come back to the office.
So staying on that theme for a moment, you know, you said a couple of things. You know, retail has always been looked at, whether retail as F&B service oriented or an amenity to the office. Are you saying, or are you considering that some of the landlords are saying, okay, well, look, we know we have a hybrid work environment today, and hopefully that's going to change looking forward, and we're going to go back to full capacity. But nonetheless, should that retail merchandising be more oriented to the office users or the office users and the community?
It's a good question. And the, you know, most urban cores, what we're seeing with retail at the base of office buildings is the biggest change in how it interacts with the office tenants above, not so much the surrounding community. And I think of Chicago, my hometown, as an example. The Chicago Loop has a heavy, heavy office population, and there's not a dense retail dense residential population. There was not pre-pandemic. There still is not today. So the profile of most of the retailers in the Loop was really skewed more towards the services, the food and beverage, the amenities that office tenants would need than residential per se. Fast forward today, daytime population of office tenants, people who commute in and out of the city to work, is way down. So how is, as office building owners, and how do we advise our clients to work better with those retailers to support them when we have depressed daytime traffic numbers? And at the same time, in the surrounding area, neighboring residents who do live in the city, but maybe not in the Chicago Loop per se, they're not as likely to be trafficking in the urban core during the daytime and certainly at nighttime as they were pre-pandemic. So with lower daytime population, how do we create a more sustainable economic model with some of the retailers? How do we give them incentives to work with us in the office buildings to create an environment that works for everyone?
So I hear these words, these buzzwords per se. I don't know if they are buzzwords, but they seem to be actually occurring or being piloted in certain markets throughout the U.S. and in office buildings where, you know, it is more, to your point, it's more experiential, it's more engaging to really draw people back into the office environment. And I'm just curious, you know, are you seeing, you know, this placemaking level of interest where the landlord is willing to put in capital to create a venue, a social venue or a placemaking venue of sorts within either the lobby areas, in the former retail areas, et cetera? What are your thoughts on that?
I think you've hit it exactly on the head. The landlords, the office landlords, have to look at it through a very different lens than they did before. To the idea of placemaking, it's really all about how can you give the office population something that they cannot get at home. So is it high quality F&B? Is it a fitness component that now interacts with the lobby or other common areas in the building? We've seen golf simulators. We've seen climbing walls going into office buildings. We've seen really the model of what an office building lobby feels like, particularly in newer construction, change. Where prior to now, it was historically seen as a, you know, a beautiful public space that's the entry in the building, dripping with marble and mahogany, but it really wasn't a welcoming place to sit down and take in a meeting or experience an event. That model is really flipped now to target office tenants to give them something they can't get home. So does that mean having a coffee bar in the middle of the lobby, a cocktail hour in the middle of the lobby? Does that mean fitness, that I've actually seen this extend into the lobby of the building during off hours? Is there lounge seating? It's really taking more of the hotel hospitality model where you feel very welcome and comfortable coming into a high-end hotel. How does that translate now into an office environment in a lobby or another public space where you actually want to spend time because there are services, food and beverage, and amenity, as opposed to the old model where it was just a pretty looking place that you would merely pass through on your way to your next destination?
100%. And I think, you know, creating what I would say almost a fishbowl environment where people from outside can view in and go and be curious and want to engage, because what you're really doing now is you're attracting or you're providing this amenity, whatever the amenity is, to the existing office tenants and their employees, but also those that are just in the public and passing by. To your point, I've seen a whole host of new wine concepts going into lobbies and then starting to spill outside. So you start to activate the outdoor areas and really trying to create this vibrancy within, you know, the office environment, and to kind of change the narrative and change that voice that it's not dull. So I agree with you. It does require capital. And so how are landlords, are they open to reinvesting?
more and more landlords, we are seeing an openness to doing it. You know, the challenge with any of this is it's all very expensive in today's world. We know that. But I think the income equation, aside from the expense equation or the capital investment equation, has changed, where a lot of landlords would historically look at 10 or 15,000 square feet of retail space on the ground floor of a million square foot office building. That retail would be its own profit center, where you wanted market rent, where you had to drive the rent up and have a credit tenant as much as you could because of the implications that small retail lease would have on building valuation. And in some cases, the quality of the operation or the attractiveness of the retailer to your office tenants was secondary. Now, in many occasions, it's flipped, where the highest quality landlords that are willing to invest, they're saying, how do I get the right retailer to set up shop in the corner of my building in 2, 5, 10,000 square feet? I'm not worried about the income on that space now, and I will make the investment because that now supports the million square feet of office space upstairs. That's going to help me get the people back to the office. That's going to help me lease space, because the constant refrain we're hearing from every office tenant and every employer right now in the urban core, we need more food and beverage to get our people back. We need experiential retail. We need things that they cannot get at home. So as a landlord, how can you help us do that? The smart landlords are making that investment and seeing that in the short term, it doesn't result in great retail revenue at the base of the building, but it drives revenue across the entire building.
So, Michael, a really good point. What I really want to understand is let's just flip this conversation a bit. If I'm a retailer, whether I'm a national or regional quality F&B retailer, that, you know, the landlord is approaching us and saying, hey, we'd love for you to be in our portfolio. Can you be in these two or three or four locations? My response as a retailer would be, well, hold on a second. I have to really understand the fundamentals, the return on the investment. If the office, you know, you're seeing a high population of the office tenants coming back only three times a week, how is that sustainable when I can actually be much more productive in a suburban location where I'm seeing higher footfall? Help me understand.
Sure. Well, I think there are a couple of factors at play here. One is on the pure economics of it. Landlords are much more willing to work with the retailers on the rent side of the equation. We're seeing more and more economic models where it's turned into really a profit share or a straight percentage rent deal, and the landlord makes the vast majority of the upfront capital investment. Number two, we've seen some examples where there's benefit to the retailer, even in a hybrid work environment, because the landlords are much more willing to give the retail tenants direct access to the tenants on a corporate level, where they may be able to provide catering, they may be able to provide direct consumer services through the building networks that the landlords have created to try and let the individuals with any office tenant be part of that community and connect directly with the retailers. So there's a little bit more focus on branding, awareness, and direct connectivity with the consumers within the office environment than there used to be. I'm still a believer that return to office is going to continue. There's a reason that urban cores have been urban cores with tall office buildings for the better part of 100 years. And those that are earlier into the game, as we continue to show strength in the return to office, those that are earlier are going to continue to benefit and be better positioned for the future.
I completely agree with you. I mean, it goes back to, it's almost as though, you know, I know this sounds kind of a little extreme, but the office market needed a bit of a shakeup. Now, this is a significant shakeup. Nonetheless, it has put all experts within the office industry, from design to the office tenants, to the landlords, et cetera, to really rethink the entire office environment, to really look at how do we change the narrative of the workplace and getting away from, you know, our traditional office environment from curb out all the way to rooftop and start to activate that, create an educational and informational format to allow for non-traditional uses to come in, like you were describing, with, you know, seeing how wellness and fitness is starting to expand into the lobby areas, make it much more engaging and transparent versus, you know, it's almost like, remember back in the day where everyone was concerned about office spaces going from traditional interior private offices to hoteling and open floor plans? It's the same thing, but they're looking at the entire building at this point.
Exactly. And even beyond the building, to your point, I think most landlords now, you know, we have to realize as an industry that things have changed, and office developers and landlords have to build a better mousetrap. And that's sometimes outside the confines of your own four walls. You have to extend out into the surrounding area, into the neighborhood, in some cases become a better neighbor, become more engaged with the neighbors and the surroundings, but also with the individuals that make up your tenancy within the building. Landlords and tenants have to work much more as partners right now, and having the right retailers and amenities is part of the service delivery that an office landlord has to give tenants. The other thing that's changed a lot in the post-COVID world is office landlords have gotten much smarter about using technology to help support creating the community in their buildings that you mentioned. How do we give people easy access to amenities in the building, whether it's reserving a conference room, reserving a trainer in the fitness center in the building, going direct to the retailer to order your coffee so that it's waiting for you at your desk at 8 o'clock in the morning? Nobody was really thinking about these things pre-pandemic. And we've seen great contributions from some of our retail tenants across our portfolio that have come to us with ideas where we've immediately advised our landlord clients to integrate that into their technology platform at the building and into their service offering within the building. At the end of the day, it makes your office building a much better part of the community.
I completely agree. It's right now, 2024, the key word is adaptability, right?
Absolutely.
Yep. From all participants. And so, you know, what I also find wonderful to see is that it is opening the doors to even call it the next emerging retail generation, right? So this new group of entrepreneurs, operators in the retail space, and allowing them the opportunity to kind of engage with that building and the community, and having those partners, I believe will, you know, help dial up the experience, regardless of the use type.
Could not agree more. And I've seen that particularly in the F&B space, where historically a lot of institutional office landlords would be very reluctant to take a risk, or what we call a flyer, on a non-credit, non-brand name F&B provider to anchor the retail in an office building. Today, it's almost entirely flipped, where a lot of landlords want to see a local chef-driven concept or a local operator of a coffee operation that is not necessarily a national brand name, bars that are not necessarily national brand names, where there's really a focus on what will the local community support, what does the landlord see as something that supports their position in the community. And the risk equation has changed because there are a lot of fully fixtured restaurants, coffee shops, and bars in these urban cores that have been sitting vacant the last 2 or 3 years. So some of the upfront capital the landlord, or the tenant for that matter, has to put in, it's already in place. Now it's just a question of getting the right operator dialed in.
Yeah, I completely agree. It's, you know, placing attention and prioritizing, you know, how you're going to cultivate these different connections to really promote the overall experience. Well, I mean, this has been a fantastic, fantastic conversation. However, I always have to end my podcast with my final question. And my final question, hopefully, I know it's a question you may not have heard before, but the question is, if you could be any type of retailer, and now I'm going to put you on the spot, a retailer within a office building, what type of use would it be? Or even a brand?
Boy, that's a great question. Now the wheels are turning. And I'll go to personal preference as a coffee drinker. There's a lot of terrible coffee out there, and we've all seen it everywhere. But there are places that I frequent in Chicago and in plenty of other markets where I travel pretty frequently, where I'll walk the extra block or two to get that really exceptional cup of coffee from somewhere that has their own roastery. The cups of coffee, I just drink black coffee. The coffee is handmade, or they offer something that's a little bit out of the box, and it's almost a wine sommelier approach to coffee. Some of those that I've seen around the country, I think they're really outstanding, and hopefully they're doing well. And if, you know, if I owned the world and was going to place a coffee shop in my building, that's exactly what I would do.
Love that answer. Well, Michael, thank you for joining us. This has been a wonderful conversation. I really believe that, you know, it's enlightening. It's definitely optimistic, but we need to be optimistic because things are going to come back just in a different shade. And so thanks for sharing what you have, the importance of really examining the integration of office, retail, service, and where we're going in 2024 and beyond. So I really do strongly believe that if there are more questions from our audience, reach out to Michael Lertzman, head of office agency at Colliers in the U.S. You'll find them everywhere on Google. Just Google them. And of course, at Colliers, we are always focused not only for our clients, sharing knowledge about the industry on core topics. This definitely was one. And we hope you enjoyed today's discussion. Come back, join us again at Retail Recorded at Colliers, and we will chat with you again. Thank you.